This podcast is brought to you by Harvest Bible College. Find out about their range of nationally accredited courses available online, on campus, and even through your iPod at harvest.edu.au. Vet fee help is available for selected courses. Get trained for ministry by Harvest Bible College.
G'day, I'm Peter Janetsky, and welcome to another week of Talking Life on Sunday night. Over the past week or so, there's been a number of reports about youth violence. Even this week, you know, we heard stories of students bullying their teachers. And just this weekend, yesterday, there was a 19-year-old young man who was knifed at his own party in Melbourne. Seems to be story after story about youth violence. And the discussion around it has been a really mixed one. In the 1 week, the New South Wales Youth Advisory Council said that the use of knives in schools is a reflection of violence in the broader community. And then the next day, best-selling teen fiction author John Marston says he believes Australian schools are more peaceful and safer than ever. So how do you get your head around this whole topic? Is it worse? Is it not? What's making it worse? And what do we need to do to address it? So my guests and I tonight are talking about the issue of youth violence. And in the studio with me, I have two excellent guests for tonight's topic. First of all, let me introduce Peter Brown, clinical psychologist who works with children, adults, families. G'day, mate.
G'day, mate. How are you?
Not too bad.
It's good.
Good. You're only back a couple of weeks ago when we talked about issues in schools.
Yeah, it's becoming a bad habit.
No, it's always great. It's good to have you here,
Pete. It's always good to be here too, mate.
Tell our listeners a bit about you and where you work and I guess your involvement with young people.
Pete, at the moment I'm in private practice as a clinical psychologist. About 50% of my practice is with children and youth, and about the other half's adults and families. I've been doing that full-time since 2000. I started off my career in child, youth and mental health, mm-hmm. And then moved on to working with a big rural charity for about 7 years and re-establishing their programs from medical to family-based programs. But now I'm very happily in private practice and enjoying every minute of it.
Mm. Young people and violence, is that something you've come across a bit?
To some extent. I guess it depends on... I guess you deal with these issues at different stages. I don't see a lot of violent offenders, people who've been charged or accused of violent acts, but I do quite often see families, mm-hmm. And other people around who've been impacted by the violence. Mm. And certainly probably picking up some of these kids at a bit of an earlier age, but certainly no, not the forensic part of it is not so much of a specialty for me, and it's very specialised work, and the people who work with those guys are really great and know what they're doing. But I'm often working with families around around bullying, and certainly the impact of violence within families. I see a lot of that.
Well, speaking of specialties, my second guest tonight is a medical practitioner, Dr. Stephen Stathis, who has a double specialty, paediatrics and child and adolescent psychiatry. Great to have you in the program, Steve.
G'day, Peter. Good to be back again.
I guess the title child and adolescent psychiatry is just, a giveaway in terms of working with some of these kids who, act out violently.
Yeah, look, I have also... One of the roles that I have is that I work within the youth justice system as a psychiatrist, so I do see quite a number of young people who have either been violent or have experienced violence in terms of making mental health assessments on them and treating them.
Mm. And a lot of people from the public, we had that tragic story during the week of the young girl who was murdered in Bundaberg by a 19-year-old, and that it's easy to see a lot of people get angry, and it's also easy to see the ripple effect where it's, families, neighbours, school teachers, communities. But I think on the broad, our community doesn't understand some of those issues or what's behind that possibly.
No, I don't think they do. And I think we've had quite a number of serious and really sad instances over the last few weeks. And I think the community struggles with that on a number of levels. There's grief. It's loss, really, loss and grief. There's shock, there's denial, there's anger, there's sadness, and it all gets mixed up.
Mm. And my third guest by telephone tonight for the first part of the program is Dr. Mubarak Ali, and he's a senior lecturer and researcher in the School of Social Work at Flinders University in South Australia. You there, Mubarak?
G'day, Peter. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Good to talk with you again.
Good to talk with you again. Sorry, the line is not a bit clear to me, unfortunately.
Okay, well, we'll just try to ride the volumes a bit so you can hear it a bit better. Mubarak, tell our listeners a bit about you know, your work with young people as a academic and researcher.
My research interest is basically the risk young people take while using the internet, and also just now just finished collecting data from 500 young people all over Australia about what kind of you know, risks they take while using the internet. And also they shared with me their personal reaction to their exposure to internet and you know, various other tools which are present within the internet, such as the video games and you know, Facebook and various social support networking sites, etc. And also I'm a social worker who is interested in policy matters related to internet and their you know, impact on the communities.
Mubarak, when we talked last year, we actually talked about internet gaming, and you were doing some research particularly into the addictive nature, and I remember you saying that there were some specific games that were designed to actually be addictive, to hook young people in.
Yes.
Do you want to just give a thumbnail sketch of that for our listeners?
Oh, yes. There are some video games which have been particularly from a business point of view, you know, they have been designed in such a way that, you know, young people will be reinforced to revisit and visit and again, and then they are given all sorts of rewards so that, you know, they will enjoy the experience. Their emotions will be aroused so that, you know, they get used to that emotional arousal, and then that make them to get addicted to the video games.
Okay. Now, I'm interested from a research perspective because, as I did in my opener, is that a couple of weeks ago, you know, one group is saying, you know, society and young people are getting more violent and attributing that to internet games and internet and violence movies, and then there's others saying, no, it's not. What, have there been research around that, and what are the findings?
See, it is youth and violence among youth is a very wider issue. Probably we should not simplify it but only attributing to the video games or the internet games. But having said that, I have done an extensive literature search, and you know, studies conducted all over the world seem to be indicating the possibility that, you know, these video games have been designed in such a way that, you know, they arouse the emotions of the people who use them, and also they have been you know, designed in such a way that, you know, people are taken from one level to another level. That way the motivating factor is there for them to continue and use them for a prolonged period of time. So that way, of course, all these studies have clearly pinpointed that young people who are regular users of video games tend to have desensitization towards harm and pain of another human being. And also there are many games which have been designed in such a way that, you know, I mean, the blood and pain and killing, all these are part of these video games. And these studies have clearly indicated that, you know, the arousal level of the young people increases, and also they get a sense of dehumanization towards themselves and towards others. If perceived from this angle, we can always see that, you know, these video games could definitely play an important role. This is what is my research indication shows.
Okay, let me open up to Steve and Peter in the studio. Mubarak talked about desensitization. Is that a part of violence for people, and particularly young people?
Look, I believe it is so. I think that when you look at the statistics, and Mubarak referred to some of those, there's clear evidence that not just video games, but the young people get desensitized to violence on TV and in a range of medias. And it's probably at a level that we're still looking at the evidence, but the evidence would suggest that the more violent video games or media outlets that young people observe, the more likely they are to be desensitized, the more likely they are to reduce, the more likely they are to see that aggression may not in itself be as negative as what it really is, and the more likely they are to downplay the victim effect in terms of not really understand the empathic issues that are aroused in people who have not been desensitized by the media.
Pete?
I totally agree with Steve. I think, I mean, again, I'm sort of on the edge of the discussion in terms of specialty, but I guess my experience too is that just in general, there's there seems to be a lack of sense of understanding of consequences of particular actions. You know, not just with violence and the outcome of being aggressive or violent, but also in terms of just, I mean, for example, we look at some of the stuff that's been happening with the Facebook sites in the last couple of weeks. You know, the idea that, yes, we have a freedom of speech, but the lack of understanding that there are consequences for certain types of ways of speaking, that you can't just say whatever you want, you can't just do whatever you want. And there's a desensitisation generally, I think, just in terms of attitude, in terms of what you can and can't do and what you have a right to do and what you don't have a right to do. And I think that sort of broader sense of lack of understanding of consequences or accountability, I think, is a bit of anecdotally a bit of a general trend. And I think that sort of plays into this subject area as well.
I call it the bystander effect, where you basically accept violence as a norm. And if you are involved or watch a lot of video games or other media outlets where violence is seen quite regularly to be the norm, then you'll start to accept it as the norm. And that's a concern.
It's interesting when I see some of the current affair programs have done, you know, some skits where they pay actors to act out some violence in the public, and how many people just walk by and ignore. And I guess that's what you're saying, Steve, that bystander effect, that somehow it's just the norm, I won't buy into it, I just ignore when it happens. But then there's also that other thing that that I think Mubarak hinted at about lack of empathy. You know, and my understanding that often it's difficult for children enough to learn to empathy, to put themselves in somebody else's shoes. But I'm wondering if the whole thing of, not only violent media, but if someone's addicted to, say, internet gaming, is that they're actually limiting their socialisation, therefore they're actually probably going to restrict their capacity for empathy.
Yes, and it's also then accepting that violence is a way to solve problems. Because that's, you know, the whole point of a video game is to get from A to B.
Yeah.
And if the way of doing that is to act violently, then that's the problem-solving means of the game. And so if you act violently, if you act aggressively, if you act without thinking about the thoughts or feelings of others, which is empathy, then you start seeing violence as an acceptable way of achieving one's goals.
Mubarak?
Yes, Peter, I'm listening with all good interest. Fantastic analysis of the situation. Let me just share with you one recently released video game. For example, in this video game, if somebody goes to a prostitute, they get certain points, and if they kill that prostitute, they get bonus point. And if they are jailed, they get even higher points. All right? So these are all the games which are typically which raising concern among ourselves now as professionals, because and another issue which is coming in here is also the gender-based violence. That's also another aspect which has been recently diagnosed and also very much discussed widely among the people who are concerned about the young people. And one more thing I wanted to add is this: the technological devices basically have the capacity to respond instantly. So the studies have indicated that, as people, not necessarily young people, anybody for that matter, because of the instant response, our tolerance level goes down. Our tolerance to delays, our tolerance to thinking, and we all want instantly. Every outcome we wanted instantly, and any little delays, we get very restless.
And I would hear in that, you know, that would actually help feed unnecessarily poor impulse control, you know, that inability to actually slow it down.
Proton, yes. The impulse control is a very important topic which has been researched. And also the not only the impulse control, intense emotional reactions to this impulse control. That is what is a worrying situation. And recently we are seeing so many schoolyard incidences which has been very clearly videoed by the phones. All show that, there are incidences where little triggers can lead to a major problem.
Mm.
So that's what is the quick reaction. You know, as soon as there is a little trigger, we have been so much, prone to show very intense reaction, and that can be a very important topic which needs to be addressed in detail.
I'm wondering too if that is that the whole advent of things like phones, where we've seen lots of footage that have been posted on the internet and the media have picked up on it, where there's a schoolyard fight and there's somebody's filming it and then they circulate it.
Yes.
I wonder what role that sort of plays in this argument or discussion as well.
Well, I think that's what I said. That's the bystander effect, that everyone is a bystander now.
That's
and
right, yes.
And so that callous, so you then start to basically accept it as normal. And the other issue is, I guess it dulls the emotional response to violence and its victims, because these people are just something that you can upload on your mobile phone.
It's almost a form of voyeurism, where I can be voyeuristic in the violence and not have to worry about anything, or address anything.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mubarak, let's come back to your research for a moment. Can you give us from your studies the sort of age range of kids who are spending, significant times, I guess, on the internet and gaming? I think that'd be helpful for listeners to get a broader picture of sort of the ages and demographics.
Yes. Currently, I'm analyzing the data which I collected end of last year from, as I mentioned, 500 young people of age group 13 to 17.
Yep.
My analysis indicates that, on an average, these young people are spending around 2.5 to 3 hours a day in front of computer. This is, in addition to what they watch on the television, and also during the weekends, this becomes around five hours. This 2.5 hours is now increased to 5 hours. It is quite a significant amount of their life spent in front of the computer. Of course, they say that, they spend little time to do their homework, but most of the remaining time, they seem to be very keen on playing the internet game. This study also indicates that, because I asked them, whether how many of them have visited websites on curiosity basis, which are generally not advisable for that age group.
Mm-hmm.
They agree that almost 20% of them indicate that, they have visited websites which promote violence. And many of them have indicated that, they have visited websites which will teach them how to make weapons. And also the big number have indicated that, they are visiting websites which will teach them how to do scam, the scamming and money laundering.
Mm-hmm.
So this study clearly indicates that, because of the easy availability of information, the young people, we are not only talking about video games here, we are talking about exposure to various other sources of information which will increase their sense of curiosity to indulge in other social activities which are not acceptable in the society.
Mm-hmm.
So overall, my research is giving a big caution to policymakers, professionals, mainly, importantly, family members,
mm-hmm.
that they have to take little time to talk to the young people and find out what they are doing these days on the internet.
Mm-hmm. Mubarak, I'm wondering, do you have any information about whether or not there are particular types of kids with particular types of dispositions who are predisposed to playing these sorts of games, or is it just a general issue of the availability of the games?
Yeah, my study participants, they have come from very wide socioeconomic, because the data was collected from face-to-face interviews and also online, because I have developed an online forum for them to come in and fill in the form. So, it's a very widespread socioeconomic background. And I think, based on this research, I could say that, socioeconomic background may be playing a very small role, but now these days it's all accessibility to internet and other technological device. Those kids who have the access, they have everything in front of them.
Yeah, that seems to be consistent with the things that we've seen in the last few months about the socioeconomic areas and the violence that's happened in and around parties and schoolyards, I guess, doesn't it? It doesn't seem to have boundaries specifically around socioeconomic basis. Yeah.
Unfortunately, yes.
Mubarak, what about gender?
Oh, surprising. Gender, yes. Males seem to be, predominantly slight increase in their frequency, as expected. But I must say, it's not a very significant difference. There is slightly more, explanation on the part of the male students, but even the other gender. So that way, we should be cautious. We should not generalize one gender as particularly predominantly, active in this area. For example, it depends on that activity also. All right. When we talk about social networking sites, females seem to be more active than males, and also, they indicate that even in the social activities in the social networking sites indicate that there are possibilities that there are leg pulling, bullying, and also, there also, the emotions are not openly, expressed by facial reactions. This is purely based on, what they interact with, the text messages. Mm-hmm. So that way, even there are indications of total disregard for the other person's emotions. And that could be another factor where violence need not to be shown only by overt actions, but covertly, people can show violence in many other indirect ways.
Mm. Steve, from a psychiatrist's perspective, does gender play a role in youth violence?
Yes, but the statistics are changing. There's no question that males are more violent than females. And if you look at males under the age of about 12, in terms of aggressive behaviours, deceitfulness and theft, in terms of serious violation of rules, damaging property, males are much more likely to engage in those type of antisocial behaviours than females. It used to be during adolescence that, once again, males were more likely to engage in those behaviours than females, but now we've found in the last 10 to 20 years that the gap has changed markedly. Mm. And in fact, and we can probably talk about this later, that violent behaviours and young people, committed through the courts because of offences rose during the 1980s and 90s, but over the last 20 years have actually plateaued, and in fact the number of young people going through the court system these days is falling. But the one portion that isn't is actually in adolescent females. And they're actually increasing. So the violent behaviours, the antisocial behaviours are actually increasing in that portion of the population. That's quite concerning.
Mm. Mubarak, when you talked about, 20% visited websites with violence or weapons, how to make weapons, I'm thinking, Streeth, I was a teenager in the 70s. Mm. The only thought of weapons was Shanghai's. Or, throwing rocks.
Mm-hmm. Right, yes, very traditional.
Well, it's incredible, because I was probably a little later than you, Pete, but, I went through the whole scout movement in the days when you had a knife, because that was part of the reason you went. And what you did with the knife was chuck it at trees, and, I must have gone on dozens of camps with dozens of kids with dozens of knives, and there was never any sort of injury or attempt by somebody to injure somebody else with a knife. And You know, they were seen as things that you whittled with or chucked at targets or, you know. Well, I guess, it, in a way, looking back on it, was a bit irresponsible. You know, certainly there was never any indication or experience that I had that there was any intention for anybody to hurt anyone else.
And I think that's important because that's another negative consequence of media violence or video game violence, is that I call it the victim effect. Mm-hmm. And that is that people then begin to perceive that we live in a dangerous, mean world. Mm-hmm. And with that increasing fearfulness, you may respond in a way that is actually potentially dangerous, i.e. take a knife with you to school. Because not that you yourself are planning on hurting someone, but you're scared that you will be hurt.
So you need protection.
Absolutely.
Mm.
And also, I would like to add that when we talk about victim effect, we are also talking about victimization. That means, you know, I mean, the person who is also inflicting harm or injury, they themselves believe that they are victim of some sort of a injustice that has happened to them. So, for example, if you see this video games, most of the times, you know, I mean, there will be a kind of portrayal that, you know, either you take responsibility for your action or you punish another person.
Hmm.
So that way, it's a dual effect. You know, they become victims themselves, or they are portrayed as a victim of some sort, and then that is used as an emotional arousal, and then that leads to victimization of others. So here it's a dual force that's happening on the person, and it's not a very pleasant situation for the person who is inflicting injury and the person who is going through the whole process.
Mubarak, are you happy to hold on for a bit longer? We're going to go to a sponsorship break, and then I wanted to ask you a couple more questions before we finished up with you. Is that okay?
It's a pleasure, Peter. No problem.
Talking Life on Families Number 1 96.5. I'm Peter Janetsky, and we're talking about youth violence. Difficult topic to get our head around. And as you're listening, maybe you've got some thoughts or comments or even a question or a story to even share. 1-300-85-1314 is the number. Or you can text message 0413096509 or flick me an email, questions@talkinglife.com. Stick around, more talk in a moment. We'll just take a word from our sponsors. Be back with you in a moment.
This podcast was brought to you by Harvest Bible College. With over 25 years' experience of training leaders for the local church, Harvest is a name you can trust. Visit their website at harvest.edu.au or check out one of their campuses at Mount Gravatt, Springfield, or on the Gold Coast. Their fee help is available for selected courses. Choose Harvest.